Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Kawai Hindu Lectures. The titles are Remembering and Forgetting, Part of Words, presented by Sri Shivaya Bodhiyada Velayada Swami. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Morning. Did everyone have their morning cup of coffee? The intellect turned on. So this is about remembering and forgetting. It starts out in cognizant ability. Before you turn the page and begin the study of cognizant ability, I'm going to impart to you two questions to exercise your mind. Number one, how can we forget what is forgotten? Number two, how can we remember what is remembered? These are two questions that can be discussed, talked about, or coming up with concrete conclusions. Now let us take into consideration the following. How can we remember what has been forgotten? That is the way you would write it. But I said, how can we remember what is remembered? And this is what it means. That nothing is forgotten. It is all locked up in the mind and can be brought out by the proper handling of the mind. So, to comment on that before we go on. So when Gurudeva says, how can we remember what is remembered? Another way of paraphrasing that is, how can we remember everything? So, in other words, quite often, our memories are in the subconscious mind, but we've buried them. We've successfully suppressed them and repressed them, and they're not necessarily going to surface. So how can we get to them? How can we remember everything that there is to be remembered? And in that way, of course, clear it out of the mind. So, as Gurudeva says, brought out by the proper handling of the mind. So, for example, we have the Mahavasana Da Tantra, which is an excellent way of bringing out the past and clearing it up, remembering it. Meditation itself can do that, as we talked about in looking at the seed of desire a couple of months ago, which comes from cognizant ability also. Sometimes meditation can clear out past memories that otherwise would be unclear to us. So, in these various ways, we can bring forth the memories, remember them, and clear them up, get the mind in proper order. Next question. How can we forget what is forgotten? Now that is even more ambiguous than the one I just explained. However, it is easy when you look at it through the right light, in the light of desire. For desire is the force that drives humanity onward and through all phases of the mind. Desire is the only thing that holds this world together. So how can we really forget what is forgotten? Had not all things been forgotten when the focus of desire has been transmuted into the realm of desirelessness? So truly, how can we forget what is forgotten is when through changing our desire, we change our life. By changing our life, we change those around us, and so the world. What was forgotten is that the desire changed. However, it still exists in the halls of memory, in the essence of time, cause, and space, the superconscious mind, of which you will learn more later. So on with the study, and may it lead you into that for which you were destined, peace, power, and a positive, unfolded life. So commenting on that, So Gurudeva says, how can we forget what is forgotten? And by that he means, how can we forget everything? So something is naturally forgotten when we no longer desire it. We forget all about it. It's desiring it that keeps it in the mind. So it's a natural process in growing up. You know, when we're small, we have our toys. When we're in our teenage years, we don't have toys anymore. We've forgotten all about our toys, which we were very attached to, right? Why? Because we matured. Our desire changed. And as Gurudeva used to say about the monks, see if I can remember it. The only difference between, what is it? Yes, that's it. The only difference between the men and the boys is the cost of the toys, meaning it was expensive to have monks around. They needed expensive toys. So that's the idea, is, you know, our toys change, our what we desire changes, and so when the desire for something's no longer there, we forget all about it. Food is a good example. An hour before a meal, we're thinking about the food. What is it? This and that. 20 minutes after the meal, we're not thinking about food anymore. Our desire has been fulfilled, so it went away. So we forgot all about it. So, looking at today's lesson, trying to tie this all together, today's lesson from Living with Shiva is called Harnessing Instinctiveness. Fear, anger, jealousy, and deceit produce an odic aura web of green, gray, black, and red running through and through the organs of the astral body, affecting the organs of the physical body, as well as draining the vital health body of needed odic power. This cuts the actinic flow to a minimum so that the only life in the body exists in a dull, crafty sparkle in the eyes. These basic instinctive emotions of the subconscious mind are the substance through which we evolve. As more control of the forces is affected, the colors of the aura lighten and the nature is refined. This refining process is done quickly through discipline on the Raja Yoga path to enlightenment. Every effort that you make to curb or control your base instinctive nature brings you that much closer to your spiritual goal. There is a very true saying, you are only as actinic as your lowest active odic force. Those things to which you still react represent your low points and must be turned into actinic understanding before you can dissolve the odic force field that contains them. Okay, so we're going to try our own remembering and forgetting. Apply it to this lesson. So, what do we need to remember? We need to remember that these emotions are simply creations of the instinctive mind and are not us. We are the soul, the superconscious mind, the actinic energy. So if you haven't studied some kind of philosophical concept of yourself, you can be very attached to these lower emotions because you think that's who you are. Well, that's who I am. That's me. We can't change that. Who would I be if all of that went away? Fear, anger, jealousy, and deceit. I wouldn't be anything. So we get attached to it if we don't have a philosophy. So having a philosophy that we aren't that, that it's simply emotions created by the instinctive mind and that we're a soul, allows us to detach enough from it to move forward. So that's what we need to remember. What do we need to forget? Obviously, we need to forget these lower emotions of fear, anger, jealousy, and deceit. So how do we do that? By identifying with actinic energy. So once you do that, those emotions aren't around anymore, and you know, you've really forgotten them. You just don't experience fear, anger, jealousy, and deceit when you've successfully moved out of them into the actinic energy or into the higher chakras. So in the Gurudeva's last paragraph, which we didn't read yet, of this lesson, he explains this concept in more detail. Make a list of all the negative emotions which still reside in your instinctive force field. Should you find that you are dominated by one or more of these emotions, admit it to yourself honestly. This admission, this facing yourself, loosens the hold of the otic force and allows some actinic force to penetrate and dissolve the lower force field of the instinctive emotion you are examining. First step, admission. Second step, observation. When, for instance, you become angry, fearful, or jealous, observe yourself in this action. Immediately become aware of actinic force. Become an empty being of colorless energy. See the dark auric colors dissolve into a radiance of blue, yellow, lavender, and white. You can do this with your present understanding that the actinic force is much higher than the instinctive mind, much greater than the astral or the physical or health bodies. And we have another one on remembering and forgetting. This is from Merging with Shiva. Transmuting willpower. Willpower is a pranic force which exudes out of the Manipura chakra. This energy, when directed downward, can be used up through excessive reason, excessive memorization, fear and amplification of fears, anger, the perpetuation of resentment without resolution, amplified by instinctive jealousies, all of which eventually dissipate the semi-divine energy of willpower and eventually close the Manipura chakra. Doesn't sound good, right? I want to avoid that. But when this same energy of willpower is upwardly directed, it pulls memory into a purified memory, making it forget what has to be forgotten. Sound familiar? So what has to be forgotten? Wrong knowledge. That's what has to be forgotten, Gurudeva says. And making it forget what has to be forgotten, namely, wrong knowledge, the concept that we are these lower emotions. And remember what has to be remembered, Siddhanta, the final conclusions of the rishis who live within the Sarasvara chakra, the siddhas who are contacted through great tapas. There is no reason to believe that developing and unfolding the 10 petals of the Manipura chakra comes easily. To develop an indomitable will capable of the accomplishments needed as a prerequisite to make the upward climb to the Anahata, Vishuddha, Ajna, and Sarasvara chakras, and to sustain the benign attitudes of humility is certainly not an easy task. But it comes naturally to one who has attained such in prior lifetimes, an older soul, I would say. Fulfilling each task one has begun, putting the cap back on the toothpaste tube after squeezing the toothpaste out on the brush, the little things, and perfecting the yamas and niyamas, especially contentment, austerity, giving, faith, and regular worship, builds this indomitable will. These are many sadhanas one can perform on his own without the guidance of a guru. Yes, it is the little things that build the indomitable will that dominates the external intellect, its memory and reason abilities, and the instinctive impulses of fear, anger, and jealousy. Doing this is just becoming a good person. So, my commentary. So Gurudeva is giving us the key here for cultivating willpower, which is very important. So willpower can be cultivated by finishing and doing well every task that we undertake. In fact, done a little better than our expectations. First, finish each task. Second, do it well. Nothing is done with half our mind thinking about something else. Nothing is dropped in the middle. Developing these two important habits produces an indomitable willpower. So, sometimes it's not thought about, but it's important to reflect on the fact that willpower, the willpower we have in external tasks is the same willpower we have in internal tasks, or when we're trying to meditate, for example. It's not a separate thing, so it's easier to see it in action in external tasks because we can see physical objects. Did we finish this job or not? How well did we do? You know, we can easily measure how we're doing in our willpower. When we sit to meditate, it's harder afterwards to judge because we're just dealing with thoughts and states of mind. But physical objects, we can see it, and it's the same willpower. So in our physical tasks at work, in our service, if we use our willpower, strengthen our willpower, then that strengthened willpower is there to help us meditate better. Got one more, remembered and forgotten. Story. When you were a teenager, this is my story, you were rebellious and neglected many of your duties to your parents. Or you know someone like that. Now you are in your 40s and look at those teenage years with regret. In fact, find yourself preoccupied with them and often not fully in the present moment. Karma will bring to you opportunities to help others and thereby make up for the karma of neglecting your parents if you pay attention to the present and don't regret the past. However, if you remain overly concerned about the past, you won't pay sufficient attention to the present and will miss the opportunity to erase that karma. So, applying the concept, how can you forget what is forgotten? You can eliminate past negative karmas by not regretting the past and focusing on being of service to others in the present as your karma presents you with these opportunities. Applying the concept, how can you remember what is remembered to this example? A natural reaction of being of service to others is remembering the teaching that this is truly God Shiva's perfect universe. So this is an interesting concept that life gives us chances to fix the past. They come along naturally. We don't have to dwell on the past, think of the past. It'll come back to us in the present if we did something that wasn't quite up to the standard of Dharma. A new opportunity or opportunities will come around for us to act in a different way in the present moment as different people, but the situation will be similar. So, therefore, if we end up in the state of mind of regretting things that we did in the past, and if that's dominant in our consciousness, we're not responding necessarily to the opportunities in the present moment. We're not seeing them. We're just seeing the past. So we're missing the present. We're not seeing how we could do something in the present to be of service to others, which fixes the past. So that's the idea. So we forget what is forgotten by not regretting it. In other words, we forget what is forgotten. We get rid of the karma. We get rid of the negative karma by not overly regretting it and therefore being open to the present moment when it comes around in a slightly different form to be of service to others, and in that way we get rid of it. Whereas if we're overly burdened by it, we don't see the opportunity in the present and we don't act. And if we do act in the present, then we remember quite naturally, this is God Shiva's perfect universe. Everything's going to work out. We just give it time and trust in God Shiva's laws that it's a perfect universe. So, did that stretch the brain enough? Remembering and forgetting. Have a wonderful phase, everyone. Recently, a baby girl was born to a family of devotees in the USA who named their daughter Inia, which means pleasant or sweet. This beautiful name reminded me of the chapter in the Tirukkural entitled Speaking Pleasant Words. One verse, for example, reads, "To utter harsh words when sweet ones would serve is like eating unripe fruits when ripe ones are at hand." That's a good verse. No one would do that. A few devotees have found the acronym THINK. Controlling our speech is certainly a key spiritual practice. Gurudeva gave us a useful maxim in this regard. Quote, "Think before you speak, and speak only that which is true, kind, helpful, and necessary." Unquote. A few devotees have found the acronym THINK with a silent I a helpful way of remembering Gurudeva's advice that speech should be T, true, H, helpful, N, necessary, K, kind. So think before you speak means two things. Means the acronym as well. Attending the first Sunday of the month Homa at the spiritual park is an excellent way to be filled with the blessings of Lord Ganesha. However, to keep those blessings with us in the days and weeks that follow, control of speech is indeed necessary. Refraining from speaking unkind words of others, arguing or swearing, requires control of the mind, requires utilizing our willpower to do what we know is the right and spiritual thing to do. So that's that one. In looking that up on our website, I came across Gurudeva's publisher's desk, January 2001. Swearing and Backbiting and Gossip. Subtitle, "Using foul, denigrating language is a mindless habit for many, and few realize its profoundly negative effects." So, it's one of the points Gurudeva made. He makes it rather strongly here, which I'll read in a minute, but let me tell the story first, because the whole thing may sound out of context. So many years ago, it was a great learning experience for me. Carpenters were building our neighbor's house, Greg Smith's house, and they were very loud-spoken, so you could hear them all day long swearing away. You know, every fourth word was a swear word. And if something went wrong, and one of them would start yelling and screaming, and quite often would just jump in his car and, with tires squealing, drive away. So this is all going on next door, you know. And so in the monastery, we don't get to see much of that. But, you know, the point is that once you get into the working world, you know, construction workers may be, you know, a little bit above normal, but swearing is acceptable in many work situations. You know, not major swearing, but just kind of grumbling every if things don't go right. You know, usually if you're a waiter, if you drop a dish and it breaks, you know, out comes a swear word. Or if you're a carpenter and you hit your thumb, out comes a whole long sentence, etc. So, you know, it's just accepted as being okay. So the challenge is to not have that acceptance, popular acceptance, wear off on you if you're subject to that environment. So that's what Gurudeva is about to talk about. Many people, even those who consider themselves religious, go through life using profane language to express their frustrations at each difficulty they meet. Do they know the effect of these negative mantras? Apparently not. People who swear, even if it is just under their breath, are cursing themselves. What does that mean? It means they are holding themselves back in life. They're demeaning themselves and making themselves unsuccessful. Their lack of success will create even more frustrations within the home and more swearing. Even thinking a swear word is a negative mantra. Why do people repeat mantras? To generate a positive force for a successful life. Why do people swear mentally, under their breath, or verbally, or at their children, or at their wives, or wives at their husbands? To vent their anger, spite, or sarcasm, or just by mindless habit. But in the process, they unleash a negative force that will ruin their lives, break up their homes. That's Gurudeva, right? Very bold. Ruin their lives. I don't want to ruin my life, no. Oh, he was very forceful. Ruin their lives and break up their homes. Every time you swear, that swearing goes into your subconscious and hooks up with all the other swear words you've said since you were a kid. Many people habitually swear as figures of speech, but all speech has its effect. Such mantras block their future and bind them to what they wish on others or crassly blurt out. This is a good way to curse oneself, to be sure, to build a big balloon of negative energy. Under that negative force, they will never be able to relax or enjoy a vacation. Many people live together as a family, but their home is broken. Their lives are broken because they broke their own heart and took their own courage away simply by swearing a repeated mantra. Using profane language is a curse upon the system we call life. Okay, don't forget that one. So Gurudeva goes on to talk about gossiping and backbiting, but we'll save that for another day. Well, look at all these words here. So I thought I'd go to another aspect of speech from cognizant ability. So, aphorism 28. Speaking without due consideration and discrimination causes intellectual and psychic upheavals. Therefore, the control of speech is the second step in the transmutation of the creative forces. Explanation. Speech is the second step in the transmutation process. To speak is to create, as to think is to create. Both go hand in hand. As a child is to man and woman, so is word to thought. Hence the control of the mind and tongue is of the greatest importance in the transmutation process, meaning getting the energy from the lower chakras into the higher chakras, or from the instinctive and intellectual mind into the superconscious mind. Aphorism 29, excessive talk overloads the subconscious mind, thus making it extremely difficult for the superconscious to express itself. Explanation. You know what it is to have a basement full of things you have no use for. This basement may easily be compared to your subconscious mind. Thoughts and words can be compared to things. In your basement, you have a furnace that supplies heat to the entire house. Your furnace can be compared to your superconscious mind. If your basement is too congested, you may not be able to get to the furnace to light it and heat your home. So it is within the storehouse of your subconscious. Silence lends itself to understanding. It allows you to perceive, then cognize. For is it not true that we talk excessively in our effort to understand what we are talking about? That's a good one. So, excessive talk. Avoid excessive talk. Aphorism 30. Observation is the first faculty of the awakening of the superconscious regions. This observation is cultivated by abstinence from excessive talk. Explanation. This aphorism is self-explanatory, for we can plainly see that in recognizing the fact that we have created our surroundings and everything that happens to us by our thoughts and desires of the past, it takes the observation of our creations to bring us to the point where we can reconcile them with the thoughts and desires that created them. So that's a very good point. So you can't see that or recognize that or accept that unless you have a certain quietness in the mind, which helps cognition or insight take place. It's one of the basic challenges of life is to accept life as our creation and not somebody else's. It's just so easy, particularly when things go poorly, that it's somebody else's fault. And we're just not able to see how that's still our creation. You know, we always want to take credit for the good things and blame the bad things on someone else, right? That's human nature. Things go poorly, oh, they're against me, you know, it's their fault, they did this, this. But if it goes right, you're ready to take credit. So, but it's not the case, you know. Both are the same. We're equally responsible for creating both of them. We create enemies. Enemies don't create themselves. We create our enemies. We create our friends. You know, we create the whole thing. So to be able to accept the good and the bad, the positive and the negative, equally as our creation, takes observation. And observation comes from avoiding excessive talk. One last one, 31st aphorism. Continuous observation will become paramount through the conscious mind when transmutation is practiced. With the control of speech, the forces will continue to be transmuted. Explanation. Observation brings us closer to seeing forms as they are in relation to other objects. In this, I am suggesting the mind and thought as form or objects. When observation is practiced, we lend our lower nature willingly to the great all-knowing superconscious mind and blend our ego into the essence of time and space, thus bringing forth understanding beyond the realms of reason. Continued observation unfolds perceptive meditation upon what we observe, and perception unfolds the power to cognize. Cognition is the result of perfect subconscious concentration. So that's a good statement, particularly the last one summarizes it quite succinctly. lack of subconscious concentration is when we're disturbed or worried or trying to make decisions without our full mind on something. There's always this stir going on underneath, which we're not necessarily aware of because we're in the conscious mind, but it's going on there. It's kind of in the background. And so we need to get that under control in order for the superconscious to get through it. Otherwise, it's like Gurudeva said with the basement analogy, if there's too much junk in the basement, we can't get to the furnace. So likewise, if there's too much unresolved or disturbed activity in the subconscious mind, we can't get through it to the superconscious mind. Okay, well, thank you very much.